It's to the best of our knowledge, and today we're bringing you a special episode recorded in front of a live audience in Madison, Wisconsin. The theme, the Wisconsin idea. So far, we've mostly been talking about the politics behind the Wisconsin idea, but it's also a dream, a vision of something that is or could be beautiful. So where do you find the heart of the Wisconsin idea? We asked Wisconsin poet laureate Kim Blaser. She grew up on the White Earth Reservation in northwest Minnesota, and she's a member of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe. She's also the author of 3 award-winning books of poems. So we asked her to start off with a poem.
So this is called Minomen Ike Gizis. Rising moon, when polling arms groan like autumn winds through white pine, old rhythms find the hands, bend and pound the rice. Rice kernels falling onto wooden ribs, canoe bottoms filling with memories. New moccasins dance the rice. Huffs of spirit wind lift and carry the chafe, blown like tired histories from birch bark winnowing baskets. Now numbered by pounds, seasons, or generations, lean slivers of parched grain settle brown and rich, tasting of northern lakes, of centuries.
Oh, that is so beautiful. So that to me, I have to say, Kim, that is a moment that perfectly expresses to me what poetry can do. There was such healing in that one short poem. We've been talking about cultural and political divides, about pain and heartbreak, and somehow hearing words that ground us in a landscape, that set us in a much deeper history, feels like the right thing to hear. So thank you. And tell us about that poem. What went into it? What inspired it?
So I guess one of the things that I think about poetry is that it's an act of attention, right? That part of what we do is we let the world reveal itself to us, and that we search for beauty, meaning, healing through language. And for me, because of my background, a lot of times that means relationship with place. So my most recent book was called Apprentice to Justice. And it's divided into sections because I believe that we are apprenticed to many things, including place. And that part of the way we come to meaning is through relationship. And one of the most important elemental relationships is our relationship with place. And from that, we can learn so many things about reciprocity, the give and take, about respect, about history, about being a good citizen, right? So I think for me, that particular poem is a reflection of the way that when we see the world, when we do something in the world, we're not only seeing just what's there. It's the history, it's the stories, it's the generations of experience that make us who we are. So I'm sort of alluding to that because poetry is also gesture, right? It's not only about the surface language, but it's wanting to invite us into an imagination of a larger meaning, which is our larger relationship.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you for this particular segment on the Wisconsin idea is because I was thinking that before Wisconsin was a state, before with a capital and a university and problems, it was a place. It was this land of prairies and woodlands and lakes, great and small. And it seems to me that in your poetry, you're continually trying to give some voice to that land. And I was thinking, well, what would a Wisconsin idea be that grew out of the land itself, out of this place?
So I think it would be vital in the sense of not static. So if I think about the Wisconsin idea and the idea of knowledge, that comes from, as I said, a relationship, so that if we think about being engaged in something, there is a process. And it's the same when we're thinking about learning, right? It's not, I don't take from my little pocket of knowledge and simply give it to you. There's an exchange, there's a give and take, right? And I think that's what we, you know, that sort of way of being in the world is what we learn by our relationship with the natural world.
Because our relationship with the natural world is supposed to be symbiotic in that way?
Right. There's an interdependence. So there's a reciprocity, there's a give and take, there's the sense of our smallness in this immense universe, and yet the fact that in our smallness, we still have a responsibility.
I love the echoes. This is the thing I love about To the Best of Our Knowledge. You put three people together and you do these separate interviews and there are these echoes and resonances. So I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about Alex and Kathy talking about wanting to feel more humility, you know, coming from an elite system, or Kathy talking about traveling the state and trying to listen and to be there. I mean, they're both in their different ways calling for reciprocity. And what you're saying is that that is an ethic that we can see growing out of the land itself. Did you learn this from growing up on the White Earth Reservation? Is it part of, you know, your native heritage, do you feel?
Well, the whole idea of reciprocity is very much embedded in a native idea of being in the world, how we live in the world. So that was really a part of it. And I think, too, that just if we think about, so poetry, but more broadly the arts, right, that is also not only an expression of encounters, ideas, beauty, but it is a path we walk. It's a process of coming to further knowledge.
You said poetry is, what did you say, an act of attention?
Yes.
Yeah. So what is that like in practice? I mean, if you're, I don't know, Let's ground this to continue the metaphor. So imagine you're going out, you know, walking in a prairie or a woodland, a place you love. What does that act of attention look like, feel like? Well, how you cultivate it?
So how you cultivate it, I think, is partly that you lose that idea of having knowledge, right? That you open yourself in a way to becoming, or, you know, like having a being filled. You open yourself to being filled by what's about you. And I think the act of attention is just a seeing and re-seeing, because the moment that you think, I get it, I see, I know, I own this idea, then it has to turn over, because it's never static. Right? And so in a practical way, if you're in a place and you encounter a creature, okay? So how you learn about that is by basically you disappearing and observing, right? And so it's an investment. It's an investment over time and seasons to have, and sometimes actually develop a relationship with something, with another being, but also sometimes just with that sort of gradual accumulation of, oh, and this is what happens in fall, and oh, this is how they do that. And so that's just like a really basic thing, but there's something about, so for example, to go back to the ricing poem, mm-hmm. right? So how do we, you know, understand sustenance, right? And to acknowledge that our sustenance comes from place, that this is food that grows on water. That's what it really means to Ojibwe people, right? So that has to mean that we also sustain that place, right? So everything is interrelated, and that we can't, treat anything badly, because it will affect all of this interdependent universe. And that means ultimately, on the most selfish level, we don't get our food, right? But more than that is that It's a whole system, and we are this tiny little cog in a system. But as I said, we are a cog. We do have a role. And so I think that's kind of it's a balancing act of kind of figuring out that egoless and yet, you know, responsibility. Like, I'm nothing, but I'm something, right? And I think poetry at its heart is about that ambiguity. Right?
Well, so I was going to ask you about poetry. So, personal confession, I love poetry, and sometimes I feel like I don't understand it. It depends on the poet. But it seems to me that the job of a poet or a poem is in some ways to say the thing that is just at the edge of your understanding, the thing that somehow seems beautiful, but you can't quite grasp it. And I've never understood how poets do that.
I love that. I love that idea that it's something that's just at the edge of your understanding. R.H. Blythe, who writes about haiku, says that haiku is not a poem. It's a door half opened. It's a mirror wiped clean. It's a hand beckoning. So it's that idea of coming to experience and that it is indeed that just I'm almost there.
It's
a process because you keep following it, right? And as a poet, you follow it in language. If you ever think you're there, you can't write anymore, right? Mm. I think Zaborska said that a poet, if they're honest, keeps asking the same, must keep saying, I don't know, I don't know. Because it's a search. It's a search in language for meaning and understanding and beauty, but it's a cycle, right? Because we write because the world reveals itself. The world reveals itself because we pay attention.
It's like you're describing a natural history of poetry. Because I'm thinking that's the experience, if you bring that quality of attention to the natural world, that feeling of the door half open, the mystery there is always there. I think if you have, I mean, I'm not a big outdoors person, but I think that people I respect who have a much deeper relationship with the outdoors than I do have very much that feeling that there's always more that they don't understand. They're always, you know, you look into a wild animal's eyes and you're looking into another mind. You will never grasp that mind. So is that what you're talking about?
That, and then also that there's a sense of there being something that we can glimpse, right? And so those smallest little pieces of beauty, knowledge, understanding, spirit bless us, grace us, and that feeds us, and that gives us the strength to continue the journey. But it's this idea that there are things in the natural world. I think of correspondences, you know, like one thing looks like something else. One thing changes before your eyes. You think it's something and it becomes something else, like that, right? You think you've seen something, but you're really seeing something else. And I feel like those are natural symbols. Those are nature's symbols saying it's not all so simple. Guess what? It's very complicated, and there are many sides to the world. And that come along. I'll give you a little glimpse about to that side. And so then, as a poet, you want to invite the reader in and gesture as well. You don't want everything contained in that poem. You want that poem to be an invitation for discovery, right? And so the language invites and leaves gaps for the reader to come to those discoveries.
Oh, that's beautiful. Can I ask you to end with one more poem?
Certainly.
Thanks.
So this is a fairly new poem. Can I say it's the first time I've read it in public? It's called What the Rain Remembers. Walk hostage and wait. Somewhere summer and thunder will spill truth. Crinkled corn stalks will talk. Cicadas friction their voices. The patter of sun showers on every water surface. A musical code. Memorize the tiny glyph of bird feet, the ancient braille of the pileated woodpecker, each eco-fact a sign or pattern, everywhere beneath the dust of human passing, a secret. mold from earth's clay a talisman, walk backwards by fours, and when the skies again break, us open and filling like rivers, who knows what flat and buried lies the mythic wash of rain may bear. Thank you.
Kimberly Blaser is Wisconsin's poet laureate, and her most recent book of poems is called Apprenticed to Justice.